This podcast is sponsored by Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management, award-winning wealth managers who go above and beyond to support and guide you. Visit candowealth.com to start building your wealth with confidence.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and this is the Sunday Roundup. Today's political shows were dominated by the fallout from the Dyson inquiry into the BBC and its relationship with the journalist Martin Bashir. The findings of Lord Dyson's report have already seen Tony Hall, the BBC's former Director General, resign his post as chair of the National Gallery. Andrew Marr spoke to the Home Secretary, Priti Patel, about what might happen next.
Oliver Dowden, the Culture Secretary, said the government will consider, and I quote, whether further governance reforms at the BBC are needed in the mid-term charter review, which, as you say, is next year. What kind of reforms do you think might be needed?
So, absolutely, I think the Culture Secretary is absolutely right around governance, accountability, transparency. But, Andrew, I think we also have to reflect. We live in the age of multimedia. The role of the BBC when it comes to its performance, where it stands in a multimedia world. This is the Netflix generation. You know, how relevant is the BBC? Some of the cultural associations with the BBC as well. I'm sure there'll be many, many issues. But right now, I think it is important, actually, that accountability, trust and confidence, those fundamental pillars, are addressed. And Andrew, you mentioned it earlier on that, you know, the BBC did not put anyone up this morning to even answer questions in the same way that I'm here asking questions on some of my area in the government later on. But the review has been published, report has been published, and this is going to be a very significant and serious moment at a time when the reputation of the BBC has been compromised.
Do you like the idea, for instance, of the BBC having a further outside board overseeing the journalism? That's one thing that Michael Grade suggested.
I think all options will naturally have to be considered and looked at, and that comes down to the DNA of governance and accountability in any organisation. But we must always remember the BBC is an international organisation and institution, very, very well known, respected and trusted, has been for decades and decades around the world. So to move on post this report, there'll be no doubt certain questions and certain elements that will be, well, should be reviewed, I think, with the midterm charter review next year.
Dominic Cummings has found his way back onto centre stage once again, accusing the government of originally planning to pursue a strategy of herd immunity to the coronavirus. Cummings' Twitter outburst comes ahead of a potentially explosive appearance before a parliamentary inquiry into the pandemic next Wednesday.
Can you now admit as government that herd immunity was the policy until March?
Not at all, no. Absolutely not. Our policy, from the outset, Andrew, the policy and the strategy.
So why is Dominic Cummings telling us that that's true?
Well, I can't speak for Mr. Cummings and one individual, but what...
So if you say it's not true, he said it was on all the graphs, it was on all the paperwork in those crucial meetings. Presumably, therefore, he cannot be bringing hard evidence of this. If you say it's not true...
So what I would say to this, I'm not going to comment on what Mr. Cummings is going to say or also what is being speculated about right now. I think it's important, and the British public will know this. Andrew, we all remember the intensity of the pandemic when the pandemic hit last year.
But I'm asking about the decision.
And the decisions that were undertaken in government. And by our Prime Minister, rightly so, collectively, he showed great leadership at a very difficult time, closing the economy down, locking the country down as well. Big, big unprecedented decisions that were based on data and evidence. And our strategy was always about protecting public health, saving lives and protecting the NHS.
Okay, so
and all colleagues, absolutely all colleagues involved in those meetings and discussions, working with the chief scientists and chief medical officers, will absolutely recognise that from the very difficult discussions that we had. And Andrew, at a time of a crisis, when government is making very, very tough decisions, difficult decisions, we put public life and protecting the public at the forefront of all those decisions.
Patel was also interviewed by Trevor Phillips, who is filling in for Sophie Ridge while she is on maternity leave. Earlier this month, immigration officials were forced to abort a raid in Glasgow by protesters who managed to secure the release of two men from the back of a van. Phillips asked Patel for a response to Scotland's First Minister Nicola Sturgeon.
10 days ago, she tweeted, "The Home Office needs to ask itself hard questions after today. Doing this on Eid in the heart of our Muslim community and in the midst of a serious COVID outbreak was staggeringly irresponsible, but the even deeper problem is an appalling asylum immigration policy." Are you going to confront Nicola Sturgeon on this question?
Well, the point about our immigration policy, immigration is a reserved matter for the government here. And quite frankly, it's pretty clear that when it comes to the nationalists in Scotland, they would much rather have an immigration policy of open borders, no checks when it comes to criminals coming to the UK, and no border controls. And I think actually her comments also reflect upon the nationalist position when it comes to removing people that have no legal basis to be in the UK. This is nothing to do with EID at all. Immigration enforcement are absolutely doing their job in terms of removing people with no legal basis to be in the UK. I think it's absolutely a sorry state of affairs that we see the nationalists in Scotland basically trying to thwart the safety and security of the British public, but also trying to prevent the British government from removing those with no legal basis to be in the United Kingdom.
The Shadow Home Secretary, Nick Thomas-Symonds, offered a withering assessment of the government's record on asylum services.
Well, clearly, people who've no right to be in this country shouldn't be here. But what we've seen from the Home Office is utter incompetence on this. And let me just take an example as well. We talk about the asylum system. The government keeps saying the asylum system is broken. They've been in power for 11 years and they broke it. If you look at 2014, 87% of asylum claims were being dealt with within 6 months. That figure had fallen to 20% by 2019. And what did the government do? They got rid of performance targets. And what we don't want to see is the government deflecting blame for their own failure, when it is their incompetence, their management and mismanagement of the Home Office that's been the problem.
Mark queried Thomas-Symonds about Labour's stance on international travel.
What I am saying is that the amber list countries should be shifted onto the red list, so you have that comprehensive hotel quarantining. We can then have this green list in place. It's only a very small list. It's got about 12 countries on it at the moment, some of which are not even accepting tourists. And then we can start to build up that green list. But that can be done immediately if the Home Office gets a grip and supports airports in making sure that passengers are kept apart.
And so this depends on hotel quarantining, which is quite expensive. Who pays for it?
Well, clearly the hotel quarantining would be paid for by the passengers. You can have particular, you know, in other countries that have used this, you do have particular concessionary arrangements in place, like loans and other things to deal with particular situations, like, for example, a family member has died, and you have to attend a funeral and other things like that.
We're talking about a lot of money here. This is about £1,750 for every traveller. Doing that prices a lot of British people out of travelling at all.
Well, at the moment, it should be clear that with the red list and the existing amber list, though, of course, I'm saying that should be added to the red list, it should be essential travel only, rather than this mixed messaging that the government's been putting out, which is causing such chaos. And it's so important because we are in a race, Andrew, between the variants and our vaccination programme. And what we have to now be doing is protecting the gains of the British people, those hard-won gains after over a year of sacrifice. The greatest threat we face to our unlocking is a variant from overseas that threatens the efficacy of our vaccines. That's why we've got to do everything we practically can to prevent that outcome from happening.
Marr put the accusation made by Dominic Cummings about herd immunity to Dr. Jenny Harries, who was recently made the chief executive of the new Health Security Agency.
The central assertion by Mr. Cummings is that herd immunity by September was the government's official plan A right until March. Was that true?
So I can categorically say I have never been in any government meeting where herd immunity was put forward as at that point in the pandemic as a mechanism for control. And I think it's really important for viewers to understand what we mean by herd immunity, because actually what we're doing with the vaccine, which everybody is very supportive of, is developing herd immunity. What we're saying is when you have a population which has a high level of immune response to the virus, once we get it up to about 90%, somewhere around there, across the whole population, then the virus hasn't got anywhere to go. And in fact, if you look at the data now and the technical report which PHE have just produced, our current immunity across the population overall is about 71%, and about 15, nearly 16% of that has come from natural infection, and the rest of it, which of course is building rapidly, is coming from vaccination. So I think just say talking about herd immunity is a rather simplistic way of looking at what is going to be a benefit from the vaccination.
Phillips spoke to Andrew Morton, the biographer of Princess Diana, about the now infamous Bashir interview.
I do find it ironic that it's a bunch of old Etonians, including Earl Spencer, who think there's a line between the interview and Diana's death. I mean, Diana wanted to speak her truth, and she'd been stifled for a long time. So, yes, she was terrified into doing the interview by Bashir, but no, what she had to say was very much reflective of what she really, truly felt. Three of us in the marriage, queen of people's hearts. All these things that she would have probably said these kinds of things to somebody else, Nicholas Witchell or some other journalist. It so happened that Bashir beat the pack by lying to her, and that's how he did it.
And finally, the former Shadow Chancellor, John McDonnell, urged Keir Starmer to roll out the red carpet once again for his comrade, Jeremy Corbyn.
Keir, when he was elected leader, said that he'd unite the party, and that's why he received such overwhelming support when he was elected leader. And one step in demonstrating his unite in the party is to give Jeremy back the whip. I think most of us can't believe that he had the whip withdrawn in the first place when he was allowed to be a party member. So, yeah, I think it'd be a really helpful act if Keir did that now.
Do you think it would genuinely unite the party? I mean, some of the members of Parliament who have accused Jeremy Corbyn of enabling anti-Semitism might feel a bit too soon, don't you think?
Well, I think it would be one small step in uniting the party. And I actually do think now's the time to move on. And Jeremy is, look, he's a Labour Party member. He's had no disciplinary action taken against him. So there's nothing holding him back, therefore, in having the Labour whip restored. So I just think it's time to move on now. And it would be just one small step of Keir saying, look, I'm fulfilling the promise I gave to party members of uniting the party.
That's all for this week. I'm Isabel Hardman, and this podcast was produced by Matthew Taylor. Don't forget to subscribe to the Coffee House Shots podcast on the iTunes Store. And if you enjoyed this podcast, do subscribe to our daily Evening Blend email. It's a free roundup of all the political news each day, along with analysis and a diary on what to expect next. Just go to spectator.co.uk/eveningblend. Thanks for listening, and do join us again next week.